Life for civilians in Iraq remains uncertain. Today, General Raymond Odierno took command of U.S.-led forces in Iraq, and he warned that security gains there were, quote, fragile and reversible. Firnaz Fasihi has witnessed the toll of violence on families in Iraq. She covered Iraq for the Wall Street Journal from 2002 to 2006. Halfway through her time in Baghdad, Fasihi sent an email to some of her family members and friends. In it, she described life for everyday Iraqis as a disaster. That personal email got forwarded around the globe. Fasihi has now written a book about the people she met in Iraq. The book is called Waiting for an Ordinary Day, The Unraveling of Life in Iraq. It tells the story of some middle-class Iraqis, among them members of the Nasser family. The Nassers are Christian. They lived modestly under Saddam Hussein. The father ran a kebab restaurant. The sons ran a shop selling ribbons and buttons. But they were engineers by training, and they thought their skills could be useful to Americans after the invasion of Iraq.
There was a lot of hope when the Americans first went in. You know, there was this concept that maybe there would be American capitalism coming to Iraq and maybe things would get better. But that slowly just fell apart because, by and large, security fell apart. And without security, it's hard to make any other kinds of gains.
So this is when they tried to open up a paint shop, or did, in fact, hoping you could maybe recruit some business for them. But then by the end of 2004, the business was bankrupt. Why was that?
The business was bankrupt because reconstruction projects had stopped because of security, because foreign companies were not hiring Iraqis. They were mostly bringing in expat workers from India, Bangladesh, Asia, because they didn't trust the Iraqis. They thought that they may be informants for the insurgents. So their business fell apart, and they started selling actually their antiques. They started selling Mary Rose's jewelry.
And
right, that's the mother. And I remember once they had this antique carpet on the wall, and the father said to me, if you can find me a customer, I will bring this carpet anywhere you want. You know, if anybody wants it, I'll just put it in the car and drive it around. So that's a dramatic change.
The lifestyle is a dramatic change. As you say in the book, you, I don't think, met anybody who had not lost a family member due to some kind of violence, or who had not had a family member kidnapped in the past 5 years that you'd been reporting there. What is the toll, personally, that this takes on people, not just professionally?
I think the psychological tolls of the war are huge. I don't even think we've quite wrapped our heads around the kind of impact and long-term effects that this war is going to have on Iraqis and on the future generation. You know, you have an entire generation now that's only seen war and mayhem and chaos, and it's very hard to recover from that. I remember one doctor telling me that being in this constant state of alert and not knowing whether you're going to be alive robs you from the ability to take control of your life and make decisions.
How is that the case?
Which is something we've seen.
I mean, this doctor, what did he or she find?
This doctor was a psychiatrist at a prominent Baghdad hospital, and he told me that most of his patients just come to him asking for anti-anxiety pills and sleeping pills, and, you know, that they're having a hard time sleeping, they're having a hard time making decisions, they're having a hard time just getting through day by day. I mean, one of the things toward the end of my stay in Baghdad was that just finishing a day every day, just going to bed at night and thinking that I didn't lose anybody in my family, nobody's killed, was just an accomplishment.
And this was the thanks that they would give in their prayers, some of the people you talked to at night. Thank you for keeping my family intact.
Right, exactly.
There's one case where there's going to be a child born in the family, and, you know, all that certain members of the family can think of are, okay, will there be electricity the day of the birth? Should we have a doctor come here? Tell us more about that kind of thinking.
I can tell you a more recent example of that. My driver and our current manager of our bureau in Baghdad, Munaf, who's prominently featured in the book, last month his sister gave birth. And when she had the contractions, it was in the middle of the night. So they tried to go to the hospital and they got stuck through checkpoints. And, the husband had to beg and plea. And they were like, this is, you know, you can't pass the checkpoint. You can't go to the hospital. Basically, she got there and gave birth in the emergency room. There wasn't even enough time to take her into the surgical room because of the different checkpoints and having to navigate that at night.
And is this something that Iraqis would say is the price one has to pay for living without Saddam Hussein?
I think the price that the Iraqis have had to pay to live without Saddam Hussein has been pretty significant. even among the ordinary people who were happy to see him removed from power, you will find that they're not happy of the outcome of the war and what has happened there in the past couple of years.
How about in the years since you've left? You left in 2005, correct?
Right.
We know that.
Well,
there
after
have been,
I left, the 2006-2007, basically things fell apart. It was total anarchy and chaos. Things have gotten better in the past year, but when we say things have gotten better in the past year, it doesn't mean that Baghdad or Iraq is a normal functioning society. It means there are not 1,000 people getting killed every day or 40 car bombs, but there's still random violence and bombs and explosions and a lot of uncertainty. So while it's better than 2006, it's not comparable to any city that we know as or normal, ordinary, safe environment.
Since your book has come out here, is there any perceptible resistance that you've encountered from Americans who want to believe that they have invested the blood of fellow Americans wisely and to the benefit of Iraqis, at least, if not to the benefit of America? In other words, are there people who simply find it very, very difficult to hear these stories of Iraqis?
I think, in general, when a nation sends its soldiers out to fight, you want to think that it was for something good. It was for a reason. You don't want to think that they lost their lives in vain. So I think there is a general feeling that they would like to believe that this was not all done in vain. But I think that you also have to be pragmatic. I think after a country goes to war, it's important and crucial to examine what actually really happened on the ground. Because if you don't, and if you don't face truth in the face, then you could go into another country, you know, with ideological beliefs and face the same quagmire that we're facing in Iraq now.
And Fritton, do you experience any kind of hesitance on the part of Americans to hear the stories that you're telling?
It's mixed. I think people in general have Iraq fatigue, but those who are interested and want to know what happened are eager. And I think those who want to believe what they want to believe are hesitant. What I hope is that because this book is not about policy, it's not about the military, it's about people, and people's stories are universal, that, you know, Americans pay attention to what happened to the Iraqi people and what they have to say.
The book is called Waiting for an Ordinary Day, The Unraveling of Life in Iraq. Its author is Farnaz Fasihi, who is Deputy Bureau Chief for the Middle East and Africa for the Wall Street Journal. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.